A significant demographic change has happened since Barack Obama first ran for president in 2008. White Christians went from making up 54% of the country to now it's less than half. My guest today argues that this decline is important for understanding today's political landscape, from the political success of Donald Trump to heated rhetoric over the nation's top social issues. Robert Jones is the CEO of the Public Religion Institute, Public Religion Research Institute, I should say. He's also the author of the new book, The End of White Christian America. Robert joins us now from Washington. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, is there a qualitative judgment implied in your work? Are you lamenting the decline of white Christian America? Are you celebrating it, or are you merely describing it?
Yeah. Well, you know, PRI, of which I'm the CEO, is a nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization. And really in the book, I try to be fairly circumspect about this really massive event in the country's life. And, you know, I begin the book with an obituary that where I kind of personify white Christian America and talk about its death, a little bit tongue in cheek, but I think laying out some important realities. But I end the book with a eulogy where I kind of imagine myself presiding over this very complicated death. And if you think about, you know, a kind of complicated death in the family where you have some people who are very close to the deceased and really grieving this loss, but then you have maybe other people who had more complicated relationships, maybe even conflictual relationships, who are, you know, more than happy to say good riddance, and then some other people in between. And I think that's the tone of the book, is really trying to describe this really new reality that the country has entered into, and the very different reactions that different factions in the country are having to it.
People talk a lot about the decline of white America, or rather, the more often, the rise of non-white America. People talk about the decline of religiosity in America. Why look at white Christians together? You could look at white people, you could look at Christians. Why white Christians?
Yeah. Well, that's a really insightful question. I mean, I think that is the key to really understanding this cultural shift. I mean, you know, from, you know, the beginning of the country, I think it's important to remember the power, not just that white Christianity had, but white Protestant Christianity had. You know, in the country, you know, we look back at, if you look at the early, you know, constitutional Congress and members of Congress early in the country, all the way through really the middle of the 20th century, it was really white Protestants that had power in the country. There's this great line in one of the books as I was doing research by a historian that said, put it this way, if you were in charge of something big and important, all the way up through the middle of the 20th century, chances are you were white, male, and Protestant.
Right. It's been only recently that we've even really lumped Protestants and Catholics together. It's only been recently that I feel like Catholics have been accepted into the concept of whiteness as it really functions in America.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you don't have to go back that far to look at census forms, and you see things like if you were an Irish Catholic, you know, you were classified as a Celt. For example, on census forms, not Caucasian, and that's not that far back there in our country's history. The, you know, extreme amount of questioning that President Kennedy had to face in 1960, even as we're headed to the second half of the 20th century, about whether he would answer to the Vatican, you know, as if he were elected president, and those were like questions poised by, you know, Protestant ministers with deep, deep concerns about this, you know, pretty late. That's just a few decades ago.
In your book, you talk about three waves of white Protestant resurgence over American history. Do you want to give us the dime tour of all three?
Sure. Yeah. You know, one way I do this is through actually a little tour of buildings at the beginning of the book. And I sort of use them again as kind of stand-ins or metaphors for the larger thing. So, you know, one interesting building I'm here in Washington, D.C., is a United Methodist building that is the only religious building on Capitol Hill. It's a triangular building. And if you look out one window, you see the U.S. Capitol. You look out the other window and you see the U.S. Supreme Court building. And it is literally, you know, a stone's throw away from both of those buildings. And when it was the money was being raised for that building, it was built by one single mainline Protestant denomination, the Methodist, and it was built to be a sentinel on Capitol Hill, right, to keep a watchful eye. It was the largest denomination in the country at the time, to keep a watchful eye on Congress. That's the kind of first wave, I think, is like just a single denomination really exerting that kind of power and believing that it could exert that kind of power over national politics. And then the second wave was more of an ecumenical movement, mostly around the more liberal end of the of the mainline Protestant world, so Episcopalians and Presbyterians and the Methodists, realizing that they needed to kind of band together and building this big building called the Intercultural Center in New York City, sometimes called the God Box in New York City. Big limestone-clad structure, land, and a lot of money donated by John D. Rockefeller Jr. to build this edifice. And it really was about also, and to kind of tie it to the other comments, built to push back on what it saw as twin threats to the Republic, and that was communism and secularism on the one hand, but the other one was Catholicism, and built to kind of exert kind of Protestant dominance. And then the third wave really hits in the 1980s and 90s as the mainline Protestant denominations begin to wane in the 70s and 80s. We see this rising crest of the white evangelical Protestant world, the more conservative end. And the building I kind of isolate there is this. Amazing building built outside of L.A., the Crystal Cathedral, built by the ministry of Robert Schuller, that in its heyday, you know, was on TV all the time. And this building was built with 10,000 panes of glass and was called by the New York Times at its opening, perhaps the most important religious building since the Cathedral of Notre Dame was erected in Paris. What's interesting about it is that, you know, by the first decade of the 21st century, that ministry had gone bankrupt. They ended up having to sell the building. And who buys the building? But the Catholic Church buys the building. And it is now a multi-ethnic, multilingual Catholic cathedral in that same space.
We're talking to Robert Jones. He's the author of the new book, The End of White Christian America, catching us up now to the present day. Robert, is the decline of white Christian America the result of something that's happening within the white Christian demographic, or is it merely that demographic is being outnumbered by the influx and rise of other kinds of people?
It's facing both internal and external factors. So externally, certainly the things that the Census Bureau has been talking about, that, you know, the year 2042 now is the year that the country will be a majority non-white country, sometimes called a majority, you know, majority minority with quotes country, but that's still out on the horizon a little bit. But that's certainly a factor, declining white population overall. The other contributing factor to that external piece are declining birth rates among whites, certainly lower birth rates compared to non-whites in the country, and immigration patterns, where we've had growing numbers of immigrants, particularly from Mexico and Latin America, that have begun to change the face of the American populace. But that alone would not get us to where we are today. The other important thing that I think has just not been put together with these demographic shifts are the large number of white Christians who have left Christian churches over the last few decades. So if you just go back to the 1990s, the number of religiously unaffiliated people in the country were less than 1 in 10. Today, that number is 23%. Nearly a quarter of the country claims no religious affiliation. And if you look at young people, it's more than a third who claim no religious affiliation at all. So it's these external combination of external and internal factors that have really given us this shift where we've crossed this threshold from being a majority white Christian country to a minority white Christian country just in the last 8 years.
And is secularism rising faster in white America than in non-white America?
Yes. I mean, so, you know, it's important to say that this kind of rise in the unaffiliated has been almost entirely due to, you know, kind of coined a term, white flight from Christian churches. you know, that we see that African-American Protestants have basically held their own over the last few decades. And actually, if you look at Latino Christians, that number has actually been growing over time. So it really is this story of kind of white Christians leaving churches and becoming nothing, really, claiming no religious affiliation.
We asked people in Midtown Atlanta about what the decline of white Christians will mean for the country. Here's what a fellow named Kevin Campbell had to say.
The morality will change. Things that were once taboo will not be anymore. For instance, the political correctness. Everybody's upset because they can't, you know, say what they mean without offending anyone anymore, but it's like, those things were always offensive. They just, nobody spoke up about it before. And now that there's less white Christians, I guess, then people feel more empowered to speak their minds.
Now, he mentions their political correctness, which is something that the Trump campaign brings up over and over and over and over again. Robert, do you think that that is part of the appeal for white Christian voters who are supporting Trump? And what does it mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I should say that it's important to note that nowhere in my book do I mention Trump. The book was actually wrapped about the time that Trump announced his candidacy, when no one was really taking it all that seriously.
You had foresight.
Yeah. So but I do think it casts some really interesting light on what's going on here. So, you know, one part of kind of the attack of political correctness is always has a nostalgic ring to it. Right. That it used to be that we could just say what we think, but now we can't.
Yes.
Because there's this changing America. And we're going to offend someone, as this this person said. But to kind of identify and isolate this sense of nostalgia, I think, is really important, because I think that this is a very powerful emotion arising from this sense of vulnerability and change, and this realization that, you know, if to kind of again take this metaphor of white Christian America, that kind of cultural and political edifice that was built by white Protestant Christians, that for most of the nation's history really did set the tone for our conversation, shaped our ideals, controlled its institutions, that as that moves from the center to the periphery, I think white Christians find themselves in a very different place, where the conversations they used to be able to have in their own circles, you know, and not have to worry too much about assumptions or stereotypes. Now,
Robert,
actually,
hold that thought, Robert. Yeah. We got to take a break. We're going to be back in a minute. I'm Adam Ragusea. It's On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Celeste Headlee. The End of White Christian America is a new book by my guest, Robert Jones. He's the CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute in Washington, D.C. He has traced the rise of white Christians as a powerful demographic group and how that rise is now reversed. It's been losing some ground in American politics. And before the break, Robert, you were talking about the nostalgia that is really being expressed, embodied by the entire thesis of the Trump campaign, Make America Great Again. The criticism of that white Christian nostalgia for the way things used to be is, yeah, things were great for you white Christians back in the day. That's because you lived at the expense of all the rest of us. And now that we're getting a seat at the table, you're mad that you're having to share. Does that seem like a fair critique to you, or did America do pretty well under white Christian hegemony?
Well, you know, I think it's important to say that we have a lot of contributions from this world, you know, hospitals, civic institutions, the YMCA. I mean, all these institutions really came out of this world. But I do think this sense of nostalgia is a dangerous one, really, for the country. And it's pretty powerful in this group. So just to give you one number here, when we asked a survey of Americans whether you think that American culture and way of life has gotten changed for the better or changed for the worse since the 1950s. The country as a whole is evenly divided on this question. But when we look at white evangelical Protestants, we find that like 7 in 10 say it has changed for the worse. And so this is the group that really forms a core of surprising core, really, of Donald Trump's support. And I think what's happened there is that Trump has really succeeded in converting these kind of self-described values voters in past elections into nostalgia voters in this election.
Let's talk about the South and where you could say that maybe the group that we're talking about today, white Christians, still retains considerable power. Maybe not so much. Certainly here in Atlanta, white Christians have to share a lot of the power with people who aren't white. How do you see this trend manifesting in the southern United States?
Yeah. Well, I'm from Mississippi. I did my graduate work at Emory University, and actually my 1996 moment was actually moving to Atlanta to start my graduate program there. But you know what? Here's what I think is different in the white South today. That you know, even if you go back, you know, to the Jim Crow era, certainly before that. You had this sort of assumption, I think, among many Southern white Christians that that really their values were still in many ways central to the country's identity, right? So even if they knew that there were African Americans who they were often in tension with, there was still this sense that they really still had a hold on power in the country. And what's different today, I think, and why we see this very defensive posture among many white, especially white conservative Christians, is that they have this real sense, you know, it's also, remember, if we look at the same period, Only 4 in 10 Americans supported gay marriage, for example, in 2008, just 2 election cycles ago. Today, that number is 53%. So if you look at just that bellwether issue, it's such a visible indicator that for those conservative white Christians who were kind of all in opposing this issue, that the country has really moved on to a different place. And so I think the thing that's really different is even if you live in an enclave, in kind of a white Christian enclave in Cobb County, it's not so easy to think that the rest of the country still resonates with your values. You increasingly sort of understand yourself as a minority. And I think it's that sense of vulnerability that kind of fuels this strong kind of visceral reactions that we see sometimes to our politics and this strong sense of nostalgia.
Right. Majority and dominance are related but distinct concepts. You can have a minority that is nonetheless dominant. But we're heading to a point here where white Christians may be losing both dominance and their majority status. We're talking to...
That's well put.
Robert, thank you. I stole it from your book. Robert Jones is the author of The End of White Christian America. Robert, you write that the death of white Christian America could actually revitalize American politics. How might that happen?
Well, I do think there's been this sense of a kind of captured a captivity by partisan politics. And what we see in the political science literature is that the power of partisanship has really taken off in the last few decades, or the same kind of period I'm looking at these changes. And that one of the things that's happening is that religious groups have been sort of divided and ripped apart, really, by their kind of partisan allegiances, and there's been this kind of resorting. And I think when you have a kind of powerful demographic, there's a real temptation to do that. And I think one of the openings that may happen here, as particularly kind of white evangelicals who have tended to vote 7 and 8 or 8 and 10 for Republican candidates, they still look like that's going to happen this year, interestingly enough. But one opportunity here, as a group sort of moves from being a kind of dominant cultural group that is sort of exerting all this political power to a more minority group, is that there may be an opportunity to rethink that relationship to power. And I think that could be a real opportunity. Because when we ask young people today why they've left churches, one of the things we hear is too much involvement in partisan politics. And so I think the chance for churches to rethink that might be a way to be able to reach back out to some of these young people that have left.
More specifically, how do you see the decline of white Christian America affecting the Republican Party in particular?
Yeah. Well, the real challenge, I think, and I'm not the first one to sort of point this out. In fact, the Republican National Committee was the first one to point this out right after the 2012 election, Romney's loss, that this, what I call in the book, the white Christian strategy of trying to pile up supermajorities of white Christian voters to offset these other growing segments of society among Latino voters, non-religious voters, it's in the long term a losing strategy. I mean, I argue in the book that Romney's campaign was the last one that this was going to be even a plausible strategy. But surprisingly enough, I think with the selection of Pence as VP choice, that Trump has actually kind of doubled down on this white Christian strategy. So we may have a real test case ahead of us about whether this is viable or not. I have my real doubts because it is a diminishing pool of voters that the Republican Party in particular continues to be relying on. Real quickly, just Mitt Romney was 8 in 10 of Mitt Romney's coalition were made up of white Christian voters, compared to only 37% of Barack Obama's coalition in the 2012 elections. That's just not a viable strategy for the future.
What implications do you see the decline of white Christian America having on religion and Christianity in particular?
Well, I think if we go back to these buildings I was talking about earlier, there was this sense that, first just a single denomination, then maybe like a single group of denominations that were predominantly white could exert kind of power. And one of the things I think is influence in public life is going to have to be wielded much more informally and in coalitions. So I think, gone are the days when a kind of white Protestant denomination or even a group of them could jump out and lead up a parade and just expect everybody to kind of fall in line. I think it's going to be much more the case that for religious organizations, white Christian organizations, to exert a lot of power or influence, not just power, but influence in American public life, they're going to need some partners. And I think that's going to change. And when you ask for partners, those partners are going to ask you to think hard about their issues. And I think that is going to be a new conversation that we really haven't had.
Yeah, I mean, religion has been, in many respects, a way for people who are very different from each other in other respects to understand each other and respect each other's needs. I mean, really the only locus of support for immigration reform on the Republican side of this country comes from the evangelical community.
Yes, that's right. You know, we've had a lot of leadership from the Southern Baptist Convention, for example, you know, first with Richard Land and then with Russell Moore at the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. There have been, you know, fairly outspoken about the need for a comprehensive immigration reform that includes the path to citizenship. But those kind of line crossing areas, the other places are things like raising the minimum wage or paid family leave for health emergencies. These are places where these lines could be crossed, and that religious organizations have really taken the lead.
Right. And the decline of Christianity, though, among white voters could, in effect, take away those bridges. And it's notable to me that we have seen, along with this decline phenomenon that you've been documenting, a rise of a libertarian wing of the Republican Party that is, to a great extent, comprised of young, usually male, white atheists. And those are the people who oppose these kinds of things that we're talking about, immigration reform, social welfare, most vociferously.
You know, there is that faction, but it's important. Our most recent data still shows about half of Republicans supporting a path to citizenship, for example, for immigrants, despite the kind of rhetoric that we see from the Trump campaign and sometimes from the top of the leadership and Republicans. So I think there's this kind of rank and file, you know, thing. One challenge, though, I think for churches that I think that this decline is going to force them to reckon with in a way that they really haven't is the issue of race. You know, Martin Luther King said 11 a.m. on Sunday morning was the most segregated hour in America, and it's largely still true. But I do think that these bridges, and because there are going to be a need for more coalition kinds of organizing, I think this may provide some opportunity for more of those bridges to be built.
Well, Robert, in our last minute here, do you see any chance that the trend lines might reverse direction? Is white Christian America headed toward an inevitable decline? Where might that trend line level out and plateau?
Well, you know, nothing's inevitable, but I think all of the signs point to this trend really continuing. I mean, given that it's based on these big kind of macro seismic shifts of birth rates, immigration patterns, and disaffiliation, and there's nothing in any of those patterns that really points to a reversal. So I think that, you know, it's really important that white Christians are really going to have to come to terms with the changing country, change from a majority white Christian country to a minority white Christian country, and their place in it.
That's Robert Jones. He's the CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute and author of the new book, The End of White Christian America. Robert, it was great talking to you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you on this. What do you make of the decline of white Christian America? And in particular, what do you make of the decline of the white Christian South? Are you noticing it? What does it mean to you? How do you think it will affect life in our part of the country in the decades to come? You can tweet us at OST Talk, or you can call us at 404-500-9457. We would love to get some of your comments onto the air in tomorrow's show. It's on Second Thought.